Welcome to the Divided Kingdom, the Evening Watchman's program, warning you with current events and warning you, too, that we live in a divided kingdom. Yes, this is the Divided Kingdom, and this is Elizabeth Caverly, and we have important news about Ebola. Yes, there has been another victim, another nurse in Dallas. You know, I was thinking about the gestalt of this. It's like a big circle going back to November 22, 1963. Soon it will be 51 years since the heart of America's soul was punctured. We will never really, those of us who are alive then, get over it. I remember my maternal grandmother, Margaret Baker, was visiting us, and I pleaded with her, don't leave, I need you. And she put her little old-fashioned hat on her head, and she started out our front door. Then she turned back, and she said, I need to go to see my doctor, but Phoebe Elizabeth needs me. What should I do? I'll be back. And then her countenance brightened. She told the doctor, you know, how she was, and I think he said, you're in wonderful condition. And a few days later, she was gone from Earth, and I was almost inconsolable. But I will always remember the JFK assassination as being at that period in my young life. And now, isn't it interesting that when we see America being just dismantled, destroyed by the evil, satanic, spiritual forces that have been trying to do her in since Roe versus Wade, and now more than 50 million babies slaughtered, and since the same-sex marriage now is in 30 states and moving forward, God cannot ignore the changes that the people who are Christian people who are going to those sleeping churches do not hear anything about sin. They do not hear anything about salvation. They only watch big screens and praise and worship, and the old hymns are gone. So this program does look at things from a spiritual viewpoint, and we also look at it as news commentators. Now, we had David Muir. He is the bright, shining young replacement to Diane Sawyer on ABC's World News, and this is what they ask him. This was in Parade magazine August 31st. They said, are you hoping to draw a younger audience? There's no question millennials care about the world around them, too. They remind me in their tweets every day. But more importantly, I think there's a hunger for consensus in this country. There are so many polarizing voices. I hope our broadcast is where you'll be able to connect with your neighbors. And that is the last gasp of the dying media. They want us to have consensus. Sure they do, because we must all swallow the propaganda. Before we get into the Ebola as such, we have to also know that there's some lesser things on the horizon. September 28th, the AP reported a new mosquito-borne virus threatening Latin America. And I think this is the ET virus 68, if I'm not mistaken. And this is what the AP said, an excruciating mosquito-borne illness that arrived less than a year ago in the Americas is raging across the region, leaping from the Caribbean to the Central and South American mainland and infecting more than 1 million people. Some cases already have emerged in the United States. And now we have heard Alex Jones on his program talking about how many people were sick, and some members of his own family, he thinks, perhaps succumbed to this very virus in Texas. Texas seems to be the real hot spot, doesn't it? Dallas, as we said before, the heart of our country's meaning. And when I go back again to think about JFK, recently a former CIA man, Robert David Steele, said on the Alex Jones Show that John F. Kennedy was our last American president, and that every American president after that is told when he goes into office, if you don't follow our orders, we will kill you. And he claimed that Jimmy Carter bawled his eyes out. And you know, it made Lou and me remember that not long after Obama's inauguration the first time, he and Michelle strangely, quote, ran away from the White House. And there was a picture of them down the street, and they looked visibly distressed. That doesn't take away from the Machiavellian machinations that this president has put into place. You know, if he was told to do their bidding, he certainly has gone far and above beyond what they asked for him to live, if those things are true. Well, this disease, this new disease, is called chikungunya. And it is usually not fatal, the AP says, but the epidemic has overwhelmed hospitals, cut economic productivity, and caused its sufferers days of pain and misery, and the count of victims is soaring. In El Salvador, health officials report nearly 30,000 suspected cases, up from 2,300 at the beginning of August, and hospitals are filled with people with the telltale signs of the illness, including joint pain so severe it can be hard to walk. The pain is unbelievable, said Catalino Castilla, a 39-year-old seeking treatment at a San Salvador hospital. It's been 10 days, and it won't let up. And then the AARP Bulletin for October 2014 reported on something I had never heard of, sort of an exotic tick. And they said, tick off. Now there's a tick that can make us fear burgers or steak. The Lone Star tick, which is spreading from the southeastern United States, injects a type of sugar into the bloodstream that causes a rash, itching, and severe swelling of the tongue and throat after you eat red meat. From 2009 to 2012, the total number of cases jumped from a few dozen to thousands. And, you know, listeners, I sort of thought, well, that's much ado about nothing. We'll probably never hear another thing about that. And then I was talking to a local person on the telephone yesterday, and she said, my daughter can't eat beef because she was bitten by the Lone Star tick. And I said, what? You mean it is here in Maryland? So all these things are around us now. And, of course, the immediate great concern is the Ebola. First of all, we heard the latest from David Nabarro's office, the coordinator at the UN, Friday, October 10th, and apparently they have now given up in Sierra Leone, and they're going to let people stay in their homes, and they're going to give them painkillers, rubber gloves, and some hydrating supplies. Now, this flies completely in the face of something we had heard, I believe, on that Friday, that same day, from a person who represented the World Health Organization, and she said things were going well, and they were treating people in the facilities. They were hydrating them, and everything was going to come under control. But as True News analyst Rick Wiles said, apparently she didn't get the word from the higher-ups. They've now given up. Now, can you imagine what that's going to do in these third-world homes with these little children? They're stuck with one parent, perhaps, or two parents, very sick. How are they going to do anything with these rubber gloves and the painkillers? And this is a death sentence for the third world countries that are involved in this. And this was probably by design. Dr. Stan Monteith, the late great researcher at Radio Liberty, had wonderful materials that he had researched about the population reduction plan. And, you know, all you have to do is go down to Elberton, Georgia, and look at the Georgia Guidestones, those mammoth stones, and you will see the new Ten Commandments that the global elite have. And one of those commandments is to keep the Earth's population balance in harmony. It will be 500 million people. What, you say? What about the 6 billion that are here now? How are we going to get rid of all those people, and why? Those are good questions, and we have to look to Lucifer for the answers, don't we? Lucifer would play God, and Lucifer loves death. Lucifer loves to destroy families, homes, children, husbands and wives. He wants the culture of death. He brings the drugs. He legalizes the pot in the States. We may get to that later, too. It's not going to be very good if you're driving out on the road. But right now, let's think again about the situation with these third world people. And going all the way back to eugenics expert and founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, the black people were said to just be sort of useless weeds. So we have that Hitlerian kind of idea that really came from this country, those racial eugenics ideas of racial superiority were taken over there. And there are still elements of that all the time. Lou and I don't have all the answers to who's running the New World Order, but we do know that there is that evil thread of actual hatred of Jews as a race. And when you get materials from a radio person who has all kinds of materials about Holocaust denial, and you hear these outlandish things, lately I just heard a program that now by that person claimed that the Jews are in control of all the Muslims in the Middle East. Now, isn't that absurd? This same person claimed that the reason John F. Kennedy was assassinated was because he didn't want Israel to have nuclear weapons. Use your brain. Don't be fooled by this human need to be titillated by, oh, martial law is coming. Oh, I've got to hear something exciting. Oh, let's turn it on for entertainment. Be careful. You know, knowledge is power, I think, was one of those mottos maybe in Poindexter's office, the TIA, Transformation, you know, Information Awareness office. Anyway, that key buzzword is power. And I would beware, or at least I would be watching carefully, the way the Bible says we're to do, to test the spirits, any programs that have power in their title. I would wonder a little bit about these connections. Are there CIA connections? What are these connections? One of those programs of Holocaust denial starts with this little tinkle, tinkle. It's kind of the tinkle that you hear in a Walt Disney, a fairy godmother story. It comes on, and I have to think, are some of you out there enchanted? Are you believing these hideous things? Yes, perhaps there are some evil Rothschild forces. We don't even know that we can document that they're really in the top line of the power. I'm sure that there are some of them who are playing a role. There are some Rockefeller points. Absolutely, the eugenics was formed by the Rockefeller family pretty much here in the 1920s, Cold Stone Harbor, and then we had Plum Island and possibly had Lyme disease escape from there, engineered things. Dr. Stan Monteith investigated the origin of AIDS. And in my book, Patriots Warning 1 and 2, my two books, I mentioned Boyd Graves, who had a lot of work about AIDS being engineered. And one time Dr. Stan said on the phone to me privately, "We don't know where he is. We're worried." You see, Dr. Stan knew very well that truth tellers could be in danger. So that's why you do need to pray for people we think, Lou and I, this is our opinion, the most straightforward people we think who are not connected with COINTEL and so forth and so on, and ones who aren't always calling for, let's get the war started, we want to get our guns out now, what are we waiting for, isn't that suspect? Well, they are Alex Jones and they are Rick Wiles of True News. So we aren't going to endorse anybody wholeheartedly because human nature is depraved, and human nature can be backed by big, big corporate interests. So all I'm saying is please keep your eyes open when you hear things. Lou and I are backing this program by ourselves. There are just perhaps three people at most who contribute to this program. And if that shocks you, maybe you would want to help us a little if you find this information to be valuable. And now a listener, a faithful listener, has said we're running too many repeat programs. Well, partially that was for new listeners to find out some things. On Wednesday evenings till the beginning of November, you will hear some important repeat programs. I think next week I talk about Hitler and the occult. So, you know, one of those times I believe we talk about the origin of thalidomide and the Nazi connections. So you can encourage any people you tell to listen to this program to tune in on Wednesday evenings. And yes, in our own lives, Lou and I have to start thinking about our own survival. We've given all our money to this program, but we know that God has just increased the encouragement to us. And we want to thank WWCR, and we want to thank Global Star Communications for carrying this truth-telling program. And we hope that if some of you do have a little extra money, you can even just put a $5 bill, $10 bill in an envelope. Or if it's anything more than that, we have to have it written to WWCR and on the memo for the Divided Kingdom. And you can send it to Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, P.O. Box 28, and the Our town is Bethlehem, just as in the Bible, B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, Maryland, 21609. And again, that's Luke Caverly at P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Now, this strange thing of giving up on the people in Sierra Leone, and again, we're saying that we fear that this is part of the eugenics plan. We know that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is very, very suspect in getting all the vaccinations into Africa. We have heard, we can't corroborate this, but we've heard that the thimerosal and some other things that may have been taken out now out of American vaccinations. But God only knows, think, 1 in 56 children now is autistic when it used to be 1 in 10,000. Something really doesn't add up. And even though Jenny McCarthy has backed back because of her fame and her need to have celebrity money, I suppose, even though her son is autistic and she often talked about blaming the vaccines, that's when his autism occurred. Yes, these people in Africa have fled into the bush and other places because they heard that these vaccines would either kill them or sterilize them. So there's a terribly evil agenda going on. And now we have to ask, is the agenda also coming here to give the cover for martial law? But before we get into that, we want to just quote a few people who seem to be very harsh in their assessment of the victims. Thomas Frieden of the CDC, the head, blamed that first Dallas nurse for, quote, breach of protocol. Now, you know, then we had WHO head Margaret Chan criticizing people for being, quote, irrational in their fearful concern that it could destroy the world affairs and the economy and things like that. By blaming these people, we have deflected the onus away from why didn't the CDC do more sooner? What's going on here? What really is going on? We're not getting the straight story about anything, really. Then we have McCain. He's always popping up like a funny little puppet. He wants an Ebola czar. Oh, that would solve everything. Let's get the Ebola czar. The office of Surgeon General has been empty for a whole year, and apparently his leftist views haven't been confirmed yet, to be something that Congress wants. But let's take a look now a little bit back farther as we realize now that we had another announcement, October 14th, that we're going to have some BioShield Level 4 containment centers to be built. Now, this is a departure. This is not telling all Americans you're just going to die at home. This might mean that when it gets really bad here in America, some of the patriots and the Tea Party members, if they're coughing, they may be taken to these Level 4 BioShield containment centers. See, it's going to be an isolation. So were these people that were sent to general hospitals and all these lax procedures instituted just in order to avoid public suspicion and scrutiny and outcry? And so then, you see, then they can say, oh, we've got to do more. Then they can build these more possibly sinister, isolated quarantine facilities. There was a chart in Time magazine, and this was October 13th, and I thought this chart was kind of instructive. I want to quote a couple things from it here. They were showing the outlook, and then they showed the shortfall. And so beds for current patients, they said they had 1,576 in place, and they needed 2,122. So see the shortfall? Personal protective equipment, no shortage. WHO foreign health experts, and again, that's the World Health Organization, they had 200 in place, but they really needed 500 to 600. Now, these would be specialists with experience dealing with Ebola outbreaks and hemorrhagic fevers and setting up treatment centers. Funds requested by the UN, they had funded $254 million, but they needed, get this, 734 million, and this would have included treating the infected, preserving stability, and preventing outbreaks in unaffected countries. Now, here's the one that is very revelatory, I think. The Red Cross dead body management teams. We have 50 in place. We have 50 needed. So where's the emphasis? On collecting the corpses. Doesn't that tell you about the worth of the African American individual? I think it does. And God will not always be silent. There will be some judgment coming to people who have this mindset. Maybe their child will accidentally become autistic through some error. There will be things. I have lived long enough, and so has Lou, to really see the truth. What we sow, we reap. And nothing is secret from God. This is a little humorous thing, but it showed me, even then, like later in life, just a year or two ago, when I was being rather callous, I've told this on air, and Lou was getting out of the bathtub, and I was in a hurry to run the water to wet a washcloth or something, and I almost knocked him out of the bathtub. And he said, "Be careful." And I said, "Oh, you're all right. Just sort of like move on." And a little while later, I went back to get some more water at the bathtub, and Lou heard it. He said, "It actually didn't sound like it was outside. It sounded like it was inside the bathroom, this horrible thunderclap and lightning." And I knew what it was. God was furious with me because he created me to try to be a helpful vessel to others and to show kindness. And boy, had I gone far, far, far afield. And I did repent immediately. Well, he sees everything. He's with us every moment. So those of you who are scared out of your wits about Ebola, just get a grip on yourselves. He's going to protect you. As Lieutenant Colonel Craig Roberts said, when he was getting ready to go to Vietnam, his grandfather was sitting down on the porch, probably in the Ozark somewhere down there, and he says, "Son, I know you're kind of worried about going over there." And he says, "But you know what? The Lord will not bring you home till he's ready for you." And that's the attitude you have to have, an attitude of calmness and trust, faith in the Lord. Now, I was saying how the Lord sees everything, even when we think we're so clever. And so all of these eugenicists doing what they're doing, and all of these black ops heads who are trying to put us into World War III by our country training ISIS, elements of ISIS, and all of that. Oh, and I have to mention to you, you should get out to the bookstore and buy How to Stop the Coming Civil War by Michael Savage. Very, very, very important book that you should share with others, and you should read it. And again, when I was talking about that Jew hatred, I heard it on another program, a caller, maybe a COINTEL, maybe just some ignoramus. He called in and he said, "Alex Jones had a rabid Zionist on who was talking about Obama and jihad." Well, I knew who that, quote, rabid Zionist was because I had heard the program. It was one of the finest interviews that Alex Jones ever had because he had his match. He and Michael Savage were just completely going point to point. Wonderful interview. And I really had never heard Michael Savage in my whole life till then. So I was so interested that Lou got the book. The book is wonderful. There are various chapters. I'm halfway done with it. And it's how our country is under attack. One chapter that I read so far was how the military is being attacked. And all of those nuclear generals who left and were demoted, there's a lot in that chapter that's so important. And I'm coming up to the economy. It's a very readable book. So it's available, I believe, at all the big bookstores. We went to Barnes & Noble. I think you can probably get it on Amazon. You really ought to get this. So when I'm talking now about God seeing everything, it was back on the very day that Nixon resigned, and I was at West Virginia University. I was getting some graduate work, and I was with a bad boyfriend that my friends had told me to look out for, and I really didn't listen. And things could have gotten to be rather unchristian between us. They didn't. Nixon came on the air, and of course, I kept my self-control, but I thought to myself, I believe I see elements that aren't good, and my friends were right. So that evening ended, And the next day, I got into my car, my big old Plymouth Satellite, and I went around the circle there in Morgantown, and I waved goodbye to this person. And I thought, good, I'll never see you again. Well, only weeks later in that summer, my father was selling World Book Encyclopedias at the local Bedford County Fair, and he had taken over from me when I was a college student, and of course, with the wonderful personality he had, he developed a great business, and he was still selling to people when he was 80 years old on the telephone, actually children of the first generation he sold to. And so he was in this booth trying to sell World Book Encyclopedias, and my mother was there. And I didn't go along because I wasn't really all that interested in all of that. And when they came home, my mother said, you know, there was a young man who came by our booth, and he asked whether we were related, and then he said my name. And that was the guy that I had spent time with, and I had realized, oh, this is not someone I should be. This is not a Christian person, and he has physical designs on me, but I'll never see him again. But you see, it was humorous, but it showed me, you know, you're not getting away with a thing. So these people are not getting away with anything whenever they have these dead body management teams in place. Let's look at a little bit of what Time Magazine said in this article, Chasing Ebola by David Von Drayle. I'm just looking at the frontal picture here. Yes. As the Liberian Red Cross convoy pulled into a tin-roof shantytown at the base of Monrovia's St. Paul Bridge, residents crowded the lead vehicle. The Red Cross workers were there to pick up the body of a man with symptoms of Ebola who had died the night before. "Where were you 2 weeks ago when we called when he had a fever?" demanded one resident. "I've been calling every day for an ambulance," said another, brandishing the call log on his cell phone for proof. He turned to face the crowd. "No one comes when we are sick, only when we are dead." Boy, doesn't that give you sort of the chills? And it's coming to America, that same attitude. The article says the Red Cross supervisor, Friday Kiyi, sighed as he launched into an explanation polished by constant repetition. "We are the Red Cross body management team. Our job is to pick up dead bodies. We're not responsible for picking up patients and taking them to the hospital." He clapped his hands, a signal for the men on his team to suit up in their protective gear and pick up the body. The work of the dead body management team of the Liberian Red Cross is hard enough. Unprotected contact with the corpses of people infected with Ebola is dangerous and can easily result in infection. And the anger and the frustration the workers face make their jobs all the more challenging. But there's another factor that makes the work particularly draining. Successfully containing the spread of Ebola is no epidemiological or biological mystery. During earlier Ebola outbreaks in remote, low-population areas, limiting infection was, in theory at least, relatively straightforward. Keep infected patients isolated during care, track down and monitor the people they've been in contact with, and ensure that the living keep clear of the dead. But in an uncontrolled outbreak in densely populated urban areas, the virus can burn like fire through dry tinder, and the sheer number of the sick makes those simple precautions all but impossible. Now, how about Dallas? How about all the people who are in Texas? How about Omaha, Nebraska? How about Atlanta? Are we seeding something that we don't really want? In Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, the article says, the three countries most affected by the current outbreak, which is the worst since the virus was discovered in 1976, slowing the spread of Ebola has so far proved impossible for aid organizations, regional governments, and the international community. "We know how to stop Ebola," says Kiyi, "but we need help." And then even Time magazine admits, that help hasn't come fast enough. The scale of this outbreak is due in part to the fact that the virus hit cities for the first time, but it's also because of a painfully slow response from regional officials and from abroad, with the disease's spread outpacing aid. Far from bringing Ebola under control, we're falling further and further behind, with the number of cases still increasing week by week. And we've heard various statistics, listeners, but if it isn't controlled, this is what the Centers for Disease Control said on September 26th. They reported that if the current level of care were to stay the same, cases of Ebola in Liberia and Sierra Leone could double every 20 days, potentially reaching 1.4 million by mid-January. That projection is a worst-case scenario. But even if more aid arrives and the disease spreads at a slower rate, the swelling number of infections could exact a serious cost on the region that goes far beyond public health. And those are David von Dreyel's words. Now, when this was written, we hadn't had this latest directive from the UN office of David Nabarro that we're going to let those people in Sierra Leone stay in their homes, giving them their rubber gloves, their hydrating supplies, and their something like Tylenol. So we probably will reach more than 1.4 million by mid-January because we're not even going to be doing the kind of treatment that the WHO representative told True News person Rick Wiles on Friday, the same day that we were told out of the UN office they wouldn't be doing it. She said all these things were going to be done, and all these American Marines and everybody, they were going to be helping build these things. It would be a wonderful treatment center. It would be adequate. The Time magazine article says recent pledges of manpower and money from the U.S. government, the U.N., and others will help, but some experts on the ground, like the Red Cross and Médecins Sans Frontières, and in English that's Doctors Without Borders, MSF, medical NGOs that have been at the forefront of the Ebola fight in West Africa are wondering why it's taken so long. See, here again, not everybody involved in the CDC and the MSF, the Red Cross, they're not all conspiratorial, evil people. A lot of them are just ordinary people, so they still have a brain, they still have a conscience, and they're wondering things. So Time says that, quote, in the last few weeks, it's definitely felt that we are gaining momentum, says McClelland. And but we are going into our seventh month, and we're trying to wave the flag. This was a potential major threat, and we got no engagement. That failure in Ebola's early days and months when the epidemic was still small enough to contain has major consequences that are still being reckoned. So isn't that important? And I was trying to look there when I stumbled on the words to see who McClelland was. I'm going to go back a minute and see if I can see that. Yes, Amanda McClelland, who is the coordinator of the emergency response to Ebola for the International Red Cross. So that was important, you see there, that this person who is connected with the Red Cross wondered why they weren't getting any help. She said they were trying to tell everyone it was a potential major threat, but they got no engagement. Now, we won't get into all the things that can happen to the schools, the economy, and the whole structure of the country. But, you know, I said to Lou, maybe they want to bring all these countries down, and then the globalists can rush in and get their minerals and whatever else is there that they want without so many black people's faces being in their way. The cost of a late response, von Dreyel says, it was April 2014 when the international community missed a key opportunity to contain the spread of the virus. An outbreak of Ebola was identified in a remote Guinean village in March, but since the virus often strikes in isolated rural areas, resulting in a flare-up that is usually contained within a few weeks, few paid attention. By the end of April, the spread seemed limited, and health authorities in the region breathed a sigh of relief. But the lull was illusory. In fact, cases were going unreported, allowing the disease to spread from Guinea and Liberia to Sierra Leone. By mid-June, Ebola was back with a vengeance, hitching a ride with travelers out of rural areas to regional capitals like Monrovia, which has a population of about 1 million. There it had all the material needed for a viral inferno, including crowded conditions and a highly mobile population. And again, listeners, I interject, what about Texas? What about Dallas? What about Austin? Alex Jones is always talking about the migratory Californians who are moving into Austin. This is a patriot center. This state has a lot of people who do not want to go under the New World Order's terrorism. So has this been by design that Duncan's care was just so lacking? Think about the man taking him in the ambulance and then driving that same ambulance a couple days later? Gosh. Well, back to this article, MSF, and remember, that's the Doctors Without Borders. It had mounted a response as soon as the first cases were identified in March. By April, says Dr. Joanne Liu, MSF's international president, the group was taking its concerns to WHO, the World Health Organization, and the UN, saying, it's a huge epidemic. And I remember very well the WHO was saying, it was under control. Then we had Robert Gary, and he's a Tulane University virologist, and he had been doing research on Ebola, looking at cases in Sierra Leone, and he returned in May to the U.S., and he reported that the number of infections had been grievously underreported, and with a lot of infected people not going to the hospital or dying before they could go. And he tells Time magazine that he raised his concerns with the U.S. State Department and the Department of Health and Human Services. Quote, the response was cordial, but nothing happened, he says. Quote, I was trying to show that we were at a tipping point and this had the potential to spiral out of control, end of quote. And by the time research on the virus by Gary and his team was published in the journal Science in August, five of the study's 58 co-authors had been infected with Ebola and died. Are you getting the picture how serious this is? The article says that as long as it was far away in the rural areas, no one paid any attention. But when it came to Monrovia, all of a sudden the ministers realized they could not catch it. Oh, they could catch it, meaning they would get Ebola. Now, on August 12th, the government announced a national ambulance hotline that Liberians could call to request safe transfer of patients suspected of having Ebola to designated treatment centers. But the hotline was quickly overwhelmed with calls, some 2,000 a day, says the ENSWA. There were only six government ambulances to answer those calls. Many who called had to wait several days for help, which is several more days than someone infected with the virus should have, because they can pass it on to caregivers. Now think of that. They only had six government ambulances. And, you know, there in Dallas, I guess they must have had an ambulance shortage for that man who drove Duncan to the hospital to have to use the same ambulance for 2 days afterward. That's so strange, isn't it? Very strange. So we're looking at a lot of things that don't seem to add up. And we must always be on our toes to think about, is the Rahm Emanuel scenario underway? Is the government going to use a big crisis to take more of our liberties? And it's important, too, to think about how things would be in the daily life, I think. Let's just think about that a little bit in this bustling African capital of Monrovia. Von Drau writes that on Sundays, churchgoers don't sit so tightly together in the pews. Sports are discouraged. The city's air is heavy with the antiseptic stench of chlorine disinfectant wafting from the hand-washing stations found at every street corner and place of business. Security guards posted at the entrance of office blocks and grocery stores wield infrared thermometers instead of guns and check the temperature of all who would enter. A high fever is one of the first symptoms of Ebola. And at a popular dance club, the house DJ warns patrons, no too much rubbing, no too much hugging, no too much sweating, don't share drinks, and don't have sex with someone you don't know well. In a city stalked by death, there are no funerals. Proper disposal of Ebola's victims is one of the most essential factors in stopping this spread. And with every corpse a potential viral bomb, nobody wants to take any chances. We have to assume every dead body is a possible Ebola case, says Assistant Health Minister Nianswa, who is in charge of the Ebola response. That means that every corpse is bundled into a body bag, hauled onto the back of a Red Cross pickup, and transported, sirens screaming, to a crematorium far outside town. There the dead, unmarked and unmourned, are burned in huge funeral pyres each night, the smoke going unseen into the dark. Is that all coming here? We don't know, but we have to also realize that God's hand of protection is leaving America. We've seen some interesting things here that are of a spiritual nature that we now have to talk about for a few minutes. Recently, you know that I had a special program commemorating 9/11, and I read from my book, Patriots Warning 1, America Attacked, telling a lot of things about the Flight 93 so-called crash site and how a number of people living in that area near Shanksville, one man who fought in Vietnam, said he knew a missile when he heard it, and he heard one that day, and someone else, an eyewitness, saw the second plane, saw the shoot down. The truth will come out, and God is not happy with something that was probably a false flag event. Remember how those jets never got there for 40 minutes of a stand down occurred, and that's what we have now with Ebola, stand down. And this came out of the Bedford Gazette the weekend for October 4th and 5th. Fire destroys three buildings at Flight 93 Memorial. A fire at the Flight 93 National Memorial destroyed three administrative buildings on Friday, leaving officials concerned about some of the memorabilia and archival material stored there. Wind-whipped flames didn't touch the under-construction Memorial and Visitor Center, which are about 2 miles away on the large property in rural western Pennsylvania, National Park Service spokesman Mike Litter said. No one was injured in the fire, whose cause is under investigation. The buildings comprise the park's headquarters with conference facilities, storage space, and the superintendent's office. About 10% of the memorial's archival collection was kept on site, and many objects were in fireproof safes, officials said. Park staff saved an oral history collection and photo collection. The Congressional Gold Medal awarded to the memorial last month was not on site, officials said, but a full inventory will have to wait. Quote, until the area is declared safe, however, staff will not be able to access the collection storage area and determine the condition of any other objects, the Park Service said in a statement. Among the items whose status is unclear is a flag that flew over the U.S. Capitol on September 11, 2001. Former House Speaker Dennis Hastert, who led the chamber on the day of the attacks, donated it during an anniversary ceremony last month. Oh, do we remember in the Harbinger? The bricks are fallen, but we will rebuild, said Tom Daschle on September 12th in Congress. The hubris, the cover-up, we will keep the people under our control. And remember the pristine pages of the Flight 93 Bible that were opened to the passage in Kings that told of the splitting of the kingdom, Rehoboam and Jeroboam. And one of the leaders said he would not listen to reason. He would put harsher regulations on the people than his father ever had. And that's what we have. As long as we're an evil country who has turned away from Jesus Christ, we were a Christian country. We will not be protected. And I believe this is a sign from Almighty God that the eagle will fall, just as our little hairdresser told us a few years ago. She said, I have visions, and I saw the towers fall the day before, and we warned a family friend he didn't go to work. And she said, I also saw the eagle will fall. Yes, there are genuine visions. We have yet to see that happen. But I believe this, again, is another harbinger. God is warning. The status was unclear of the flag that flew over the U.S. Capitol, symbolizing this evil nation that is now arming ISIS jihadists to go and kill Christians, behead Christians, crucify them, rip that little boy in half who was a part of Canon Andrew White's Baghdad Church, whom he baptized. And the pastors remain silent. They don't want to have anything but their big screens, their rock music, their praise and worship, and their nice little jobs, and they can watch their little TV sports. They can go home and drink their beer. A former minister in my own church, a Methodist church back in Pennsylvania, posted a big internet site, and he showed his big man cave, and he had his beer, and he wanted to have a urinal put in there. And it got so gross that I thought, man alive, this was a Methodist pastor in the same church where I grew up, and I heard Pastor Norman Martin many, many years years ago, wonderful pastor who had been part of D-Day, the Normandy invasion. I think he's still alive. And he brought the Bible to life. And at that time, we had the old hymnals. They were given away in the Clintonian years, and my mother's heart was broken. I think it was after my father's death, by the same minister who later had the man cave posted in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on a website. My mother said, I looked in some of those hymnals, and I saw your uncle, Will Carlton Cuppett, his name was there. Her heart was broken. She sensed what was happening, though she wouldn't fully know it in her lifetime. She asked Lou, is Elizabeth still doing that stuff, figuring out stuff with the New World Order? And he lied because she had lost her leg and she was very ill. And he said, oh, I think she's pretty well out of that now. And that was at this very time I was completing my books, Patriots Warning 1 and 2. Now, the president of the families of Flight 93, Gordon Felt, issued a statement expressing sadness about the fire and saying the group awaited further information on the cause. It's time for pastors to awaken the people to the evil. And I talked about the heresy of a Protestant minister there, getting rid of those old hymnals and getting rid of the salvation message. We know Rob Bell, who says there's no hell. There's much evil coming into the Protestant church in the form of the emerging church. And now, let's just get the new update on the Catholic situation. And you know, at McDonald's, there's this little mascot, a purple animal. And we might ask why. We know what purple stands for. But October 14th, the AP is reporting, gay rights groups, this is Vatican City, hailed a seismic shift by the Catholic Church toward gays on Monday after bishops said homosexuals had gifts to offer the church and that their partnerships, while morally problematic, provided homosexuals with, quote, precious support. In a preliminary report halfway through a Vatican meeting on family life, the bishops also said the church must recognize the, quote, positive aspects of civil unions, and even Catholics who cohabitate with the aim of bringing them to a lifelong commitment in a church wedding. The report summarized the closed-door debate that Pope Francis initiated to discuss a host of hot-button family issues such as marriage, divorce, homosexuality, and birth control. No decisions were announced, but the tone of the report was one of almost revolutionary acceptance rather than condemnation. And it will guide discussions until a final document is issued Saturday. For the LGBT Catholics in the United States and around the world, this new document is a light in the darkness, a dramatic new tone from a church hierarchy that has long denied the very existence of committed and loving gay and lesbian partnerships, end of quote, said Chad Griffin, president of Human Rights Campaign, the biggest LGBT rights organization in the U.S. Conservative groups denounced the report as heresy and a, quote, betrayal that will only serve to confuse Catholics. In an indication of the chasm that is apparently underway within the church leadership itself, Francis decided late Friday to add six progressives from four continents to the synod leadership to help prepare the final document after several conservatives were elected to leadership positions. Well, you know, I'm interjecting, maybe if they wait long enough, it's a shame that the Ebola outbreak didn't come just a few months earlier. Maybe a lot of those very conservative African bishops would have been dead, and that would have solved that problem. But back to this AP article, none of Francis's appointees were Africans, who are traditionally among the most conservative on family issues. Well, my scenario didn't hold water. The article clearly took into account the views of the Pope, whose "Who am I to judge?" comment about gay signaled a new tone of welcome for the church. Their report also reflected the views of ordinary Catholics, who, in responses to Vatican questionnaires in a run-up to the synod, rejected church teaching on birth control and homosexuality as outdated and irrelevant. The bishop said gays had, quote, gifts and qualities to offer, and asked rhetorically if the church was ready to provide them a welcoming place, quote, accepting and valuing their sexual orientation without compromising Catholic doctrine on the family and matrimony, end of quote. for a 2,000-year-old institution that teaches that gay sex is intrinsically disordered, even posing the question was significant. Quote, "This is a stunning change in the way the Catholic Church speaks of gay people," end of quote, said the Reverend James Martin, a Jesuit author. Quote, "The Synod is clearly listening to the complex real-life experiences of Catholics around the world and seeking to address them with mercy as Jesus did," end of quote. The bishops repeated that gay marriage was off the table, but it acknowledged that gay partnerships had merit. Quote, "Without denying the moral problems connected to homosexual unions, it has to be noted that there are cases in which mutual aid to the point of sacrifice constitutes a precious support in the life of the partners," end of quote, they said. Francis D. Bernardo, executive director of New Ways Ministry, a Catholic gay rights group, said that though the report repeats doctrine about gay marriage, quote, "The move toward accepting and valuing the gifts of gay and lesbian people is a major step forward," end of quote. Conservative groups rejected the report as a betrayal and even heresy. Quote, "What will Catholic parents now have to tell their children about contraception, cohabiting with partners, or living homosexual lifestyles?" asked Maria Madiz, coordinator of the Voice of the Family, which says it is representing several pro-life and conservative groups. Will those parents now have to tell their children that the Vatican teaches that there are positive and constructive aspects to these mortal sins? This approach destroys grace in souls. The tradition-minded blog, Rorate Chaley, called the report heresy, homo-heresy. For heterosexuals, the bishop said the church must grasp the positive reality of civil weddings and even cohabitation with the aim of helping the couple commit eventually to a church wedding. How far we are falling. How quickly we are removing Jesus Christ and the Bible from our country. And in the days ahead, if you want God's protection, whether you're a Roman Catholic or a Protestant, you must come out of that heresy, and you must fear God and keep His laws. You know, Lou and I were able to talk to four beautiful Roman Catholic friends we have. And in every case, these four did not believe that Mary was the co-redemptrix. They believed that she should be revered as a special person because she was the mother of Jesus. And I found that quite heartening. You see, we have to look at the individual, and we can't come out with blanket stereotypes that God will never save a Roman Catholic soul because of what they believe. God is the ultimate final arbiter of our hearts. And I believe that anyone who says, when I ask a Catholic couple over the weekend, "Do you believe that Jesus died for your sins and is your personal Savior?" "Yes," they said. I don't think Almighty God is going to categorize them in the same way He's going to categorize the people who are removing the Bible truths and substituting sin. Sin as doctrine. And if we want to be under Jesus' care, we're going to have to each repent every day. Every day. Because we know that Mike Adams wrote, "Ebola transmission by aerosols confirmed. Virus survives for days outside infected hosts." We brought that to you earlier. We'll get back to that again on a future program. And we know that Paul Joseph Watson wrote, "Obama signs executive order to allow detention of Americans with respiratory illnesses." And let's just think about a little bit of that again. President Obama has signed an amendment to an executive order that would allow him to mandate the apprehension and detention of Americans who merely show signs of, quote, respiratory illness. The executive order, titled Revised List of Quarantinable Communicable Diseases, amends Executive Order 13295, passed by George W. Bush in April 2003, which allows for the, quote, apprehension, detention, or conditional release of individuals to prevent the introduction, transmission, or spread of suspected communicable diseases. Boy, that leaves a lot of leeway, doesn't it? The amendment signed by Obama replaces subsection B of the original Bush executive order, which referred only to SARS. Obama's amendment allows for the detention of Americans who display, quote, severe acute respiratory syndromes, which are diseases that are associated with fever and signs and symptoms of pneumonia or other respiratory illness, are capable of being transmitted from person to person, and that either are causing or have the potential to cause a pandemic or upon infection are highly likely to cause mortality or serious morbidity if not properly controlled. Isn't that interesting? Was that preparatory in the same way we've heard that federal websites were advertising for auspices who would help to take care of undocumented alien children in large numbers coming, months and months before June came and all of these children arrived? How about this executive order? Is that preparatory? Remember those round blue signs that say evacuation route on Route 50, that large route that takes people from Western Maryland to Ocean City every year? We've seen those same signs in the inner city in Baltimore. We've seen them in Pennsylvania, eastern Pennsylvania. Are we getting ready for that terrible scenario of the body bags on the back of the pickup truck? Or maybe we'll use that company, it's not coming to my mind, on a big white van that picks up the aborted fetuses. Oh, what's that company? Yes, Stericycle. And Lou and I were just turning there onto Route 50 about 3 years ago, and I said, oh, my gosh, there it is. And there it was refueling at a Texaco station or something, Gulf something or other. Anyway, there it was, Stericycle, the one that picks up those fetuses. So we're going to get back what we have given out. The CDC also has measures in place for dealing with the outbreak of a communicable disease, which allows for the quarantine of well persons who do not show symptoms of the disease. Now, isn't that interesting? And Watson says, in addition, under the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, public health authorities and governors would be given expanded police powers to seize control of communications devices, public and private property, as well as a host of other draconian measures in the event of a public health emergency. When this legislation was introduced, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons warned that it could turn governors into dictators. We need a lot of prayer, and I hope that you are preparing your families with a lot of food stored and a water source. We don't have anything to do with the Berkey, but I have to say that I bought a lot of them one time with a discount back when I had money when my mother died from Debbie Morrow, dear friend Debbie at the Berkey, and we gave them to some sick neighbors, some relatives, and these people prospered. One was our mail carrier at that time. She had been in an awful wreck, and she was not well. And all of a sudden, I realized her skin looked completely different, healthy. She said, I've been using the water filter, and a lot of them renewed. And so we do believe it probably is a good product. We have one ourselves, and so we can't vouch for it entirely, but get something. We hope that it removes some fluoride, and the people we gave it to who lived in the cities, we put in the order, clip-on fluoride filters. It's supposed to remove some of it, but it absolutely removes chlorine and a lot of the bad stuff. So you need to have that, and possibly, you see, you could go to a stream. Now, we did hear something. If you had to exist using pond water, you should run it through a coffee filter first so you don't contaminate your gravity filter. Well, it's been a pleasure to come to you, and we hope that you will write to us. We do need letters of encouragement at Lou Caverly at P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Again, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Keep standing up for Jesus and the truth. Good night.